216 on Link to the Past Randomizer podcast. I'm your host, Fear Agent. Today on the show, we've got Cassidy Moen. I really enjoyed my time talking with Cassidy today, and I hope you do too. Gonna go over a couple of things really quick. First of all, Mario Draft. A few of us drafted the Mario game series, and the results are in. We got the same amount of responses as we did for the Zelda draft. This time, though, we've got a clear-cut winner, Allison. Took it with almost 50% of the vote. I should have gone with my gut and avoided Super Mario Sunshine. I got zero votes. Rightfully so. I think, Super Mario 3 was a great pick, but missing out on Super Mario Galaxy in retrospect was a really bad pick by me. I got zero votes, understandably. Allison, with Super Mario World, Super Mario Galaxy 2, Bowser's Fury, and Paper Mario, really, really strong lineup. Jesse and Kazen did come in second and third, with Shereen and Jumbo coming in after them. And then again, no votes for the old Fear Agent here. A lot of fun. We had a lot of fun with that. I think we may do one more draft before the end of the season. Not 100%, though. League's back. Had the kickoff match on Sunday that Claire Mouse and I called over on the main Speed Gaming channel. The Salt Miners, GGW, and Telethar took on 2Infinity and Pagog, Relkin and Humbug. And Relkin and Humbug with the, I don't know if I want to call it an upset, but they took the win over the champs from last season. Really fun race. Go check that out. And we're into it. Monday, the league is open. Looking at the schedule for Monday, the 18th, three invitational races on the docket. All three of them being restreamed. Kicking things off will be Saha's Kids versus JKLOL. Then in the open, looks like seven races over on the open side. So busy day. And that's the way it's going to be for the next 7 weeks. Exciting times. League's always fun. And I'm a big fan of watching all these races, especially the co-op week. Co-op week is a lot of fun. My favorite week. Your mom's favorite rando team will be playing Wednesday at 9:10 p.m. Eastern. That's September 20th. I think our second match will probably be on Sunday. Still waiting for Shereen to get his availability for the week. We'll be going up against Artie Walsh and Jay Meesher. It's going to be a good one. A tough one. Really good team. I'm looking forward to it, though. It's going to be a lot of fun. Another cheater in the community. That's really unfortunate. Had to ban another cheater. And it's just stop. Please just stop cheating. Like, if you're trying to get away with it because you didn't know what Tark was going to be like and the council dissolved, just stop. If you did it before and you thought you could get away with it, you can't. We'll find you. And it sucks for everyone. Just, I said this last week, it sucks for everyone. So stop cheating. Heading into the backstretch of the season here, season number 4, ended up going pretty long, longer than I thought. But today we've got Cassidy, and then we've got 4 more episodes to close out the season. So let's get to today's episode. Today on the show, we've got Cassidy Moen. You might have seen Cassidy around a lot lately on the dev side, especially since the changeover to FastROM, which happened a couple of weeks ago. Unfortunately, we don't talk about it. You don't talk about the FastROM at all because I didn't know it was a thing. So we re-recorded the episode, and then almost a week after that is when the FastROM stuff became a little bit more public. And then the FastROM was just out. And, you know, a lot of the controversy over the FastROM was the way it was announced. I think Cassidy from the dev side did a pretty good job of apologizing and trying to understand the community's perspective on it all. I feel like they owned up to the fact that it was like coming and no one really knew about it. That was the real blunder. Like, I like FastROM. I know there's people that are against it. It's the new norm. It's just the way it's going to be. The league is running on the old ROMs for the season, but that's it as far as the old ROMs goes. Some of the tournaments that are in its final stages are still using the old ROM, but Ladder's using the new ROM now. And I imagine any other tournament that starts going forward will be using the fast ROM as well. The big blunder for the fast ROM was just the rollout. The rollout was really bad. And like I said, Cassidy did a really good job of like owning up to that. I just wish we could have talked about it. The fact that it was coming and we didn't talk about it bums me out a little bit. But the rest of the interview was a lot of fun. And, you know, we talk some dev stuff. We talk some race stuff. We talk a lot of music. Cassidy's a little bit of a tougher nut to crack. I describe him as a lone wolf in the episode. And lone wolves tend to hold personal stuff to themselves. That's kind of what makes them lone wolves. But I think Cassidy does a great job in this interview. And I think we kind of, for the first time, get a chance to hear things from his perspective a bit more. And I really like that. I really like Cassidy. And I think you will too after this interview. So let's get to it. Here's Cassidy Moen. All right, Cassidy, thanks for coming on the show, man. Super excited to chat. And, you know, we've known each other for quite a bit. You hang out in my streams. I know that we have a very similar relationship to music because of all the times that we've been jamming in my stream with all the stuff that you've brought. But I don't really know you all that well, and I don't know if you kind of really put yourself out there in the community all that much, other than being a part of the community. So I'm super excited.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on. Big fan of the show.
You have a different relationship with ALTTPR than some other people. Like, you're not a commentator. I know you've done comms occasionally, and you're not really a tracker, and you play a little bit. I see you play a little bit, but you are more now, especially in the dev side of things, right? Like, that, would you say is mostly your role?
Yeah, pretty much. I used to race a lot more, like back in the day, like 2018 to 2019, maybe. But yeah, most of the time, like, you know, I still race in the ladder, but like most of my engagement with it, I would say, yeah, it's like doing development, mostly on the like the ROM side of things. And
what does that mean? What do you mean by the ROM side of things? Like, actually changing what happens to the ROM when it gets patched over?
So basically, like, the way the project is structured kind of is like, there's what we call like the template assembly. And assembly is like basically machine code for the SNES, right? So so there's like a lot of like ROM hacking basically that goes into making everything work and like appear seamless. So what we have is like, the way it's like structured is we have like the base ROM, which is just kind of like this blank slate. And then that's all written in like assembly. And then the randomizer just writes data to it. It doesn't write any like Super Nintendo code or anything. All it does is write like your items and your bosses and stuff.
Okay.
So yeah, so mostly what I'm doing is like, you know, fixing bugs like in the ROM, or just like, you know, writing new features, stuff like that.
Okay. We'll get to that more specifically. Let's go back to when you first played Link to the Past. Was it as a kid? Were you growing up playing Link to the Past and the Nintendo?
Yeah. We had a Super Nintendo like as far back as I can remember. I think I was born like a little bit before it came out. But yeah, we had it as a kid. I remember like my family playing it, my older siblings, my dad would play on occasion. And like I'd be, you know, like 3 or 4, and they'd like help me out, or, you know, be like, oh, can you help me? Can you like beat this boss, do this dungeon, or like, where do I go? You know, that type of thing.
It was out before you were born is what you just said, right? So you were pretty young then when you were first playing it.
Yeah. Well, no, I was born maybe a few years before the SNES was released.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. But so that was your first console that you can remember.
Yeah. Yeah. We also had like we had a computer in the house. It was like a Tandy something. I forget the model, but it was like one of those DOS computers.
Mm-hmm.
And like it had like, you know, like 16 colors on the screen or whatever. And we had a couple games for that. The one I remember most was like the Black Cauldron. It was one of those like Sierra adventure games.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. That's awesome. So you grew up in a family that was already gaming then. It sounds like you were probably the youngest. Right.
Yep.
Okay. So you had older siblings already playing games. How much of the Super Nintendo do you really remember, or is it more like vague memories?
I'd say I have pretty strong memories because.
Okay.
Yeah, I played it a lot, and then like as I got older, like I got an emulation and stuff, and kept playing it basically.
Okay. Did it stick with Nintendo, or did you guys move on? Did you have other consoles and other systems you were playing?
I think my older brother got like a Nintendo 64, then he traded that for a PlayStation or something. Somewhere along the line. Then like somewhere around 2001 or so, I think my parents got us a PS2, and that's basically it for consoles for me.
Okay. Well, do you remember playing a lot of the PlayStation 2? Was there a game or something that you played a lot of on any of the systems you remember growing up?
Not too much, just a little bit of this and that. You know, I'd rent games or whatever, you know. I'd occasionally buy one. Like, I bought Kingdom Hearts when it came out. I think Burnout. One of the Burnout games, I can't remember what it was called.
Yeah, I haven't played Burnout in a long time. That was a lot of fun, though.
Yeah.
So what were you doing? Because it doesn't sound like you were gaming a lot. Did you have other interests as you were growing up? Was music one of them?
Yeah. I was into music, mostly just, you know, mostly just as a listener. And then like When I was a teenager, like some rapper I was into had like a remix contest type thing. And I got kind of into that. I didn't submit anything, but it was one of those things where it's like listening to other people's remixes of these songs I liked, you know, and then I'm like, you know, whoa, how do they do that? So I kind of got into that, like into sampling and stuff like that. I never really played an instrument. I kind of like learned like basic piano and just a little bit of music theory and whatnot. But
so you, because, okay. So when I would stream, in the past, I used to have like a YouTube request thing that is built into one of these bots. I don't even remember, but we, you know, we'd play Link to the Past randomizer and then we'd have YouTube requests going. And everyone would request like the normal popular stuff. But then you came in and you'd always come in with like some stuff that either I'd never heard of or like, again, remixes of stuff that was like really, really cool. So I take it that is where the interest began and I guess continued.
Yeah. Like mostly I listened to the radio. I had a friend as a child who was like really into music and would always send me stuff. I got like kind of into like hip hop and stuff like that. Different labels and stuff like Rhymesayers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think who's on them, but people might recognize that name.
But it wasn't like top 40 stuff, right? It wasn't like the big, or were you into that as well? I guess your interest might've been diverse.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I was just kind of, I'm just kind of like whatever when it comes to that, you know, I just listen to whatever's on and if it's good, then check it out.
So, okay. So I'm trying to think back. So is this like, when you're talking about that, like remix stuff, when is this? Is this early 2000s?
Yeah. Probably around 2004, maybe.
Okay. So the computer has obviously changed music drastically with the way that you can do anything and everything with just a laptop now. But in 2004, you know, early 2000s, it wasn't as readily available. So what were you using to start learning how to remix?
I can't remember. The first thing I used was just some random freeware like thing, like a tracker, I think it's called, where like, you know, it has like the grid and then you can like, you know, set your tempo and you can like line up your samples and instruments and whatnot.
Sure.
I can't remember what it was called. Then I got into like Fruity Loops, I think.
Yeah, and, like, that was the one I did too.
Yeah.
I had a pirated copy of Fruity Loops because one, there was poor. There was no way I could afford it. And everything was pirated back then. I don't know about it. Still might be like I haven't used a torrent. I don't even know if that's still a thing or not. But in the days of Napster and torrents and stuff, like, you know, you're getting all your software free. Now I pay for it because I'm a responsible adult, I guess. But man, Fruity Loops, man, I spent so much time, one, learning how to use it, and then just creating like tons of like different tracks and stuff.
Oh yeah. I pirated all that stuff too. Like probably like, you know, hundreds, thousands of dollars of worth of stuff. Right. You know, like
yep.
Totally. Kind of funny to think about now. But yeah, it is really fun. Is. Yeah, like, you know, you can, you know, they've got like all the little synths and stuff and all the little knobs and whatnot, and then like, if you have a sample or something, you can kind of like, I haven't used it in a long time, but as I remember, you know, you can kind of like see the little waveform or whatever it looks like and try to like line it up, all that stuff.
Yeah. So that's what you were doing then, just kind of getting into trying to remix. Were you making your own music or was it mostly sampling stuff and remixing stuff? And
Mostly sampling. Sometimes I'd play with little like instrument presets and whatnot, but I really liked the idea of just like, you know, kind of just chopping up different stuff and then like, you know, sort of making like a pastiche or just trying to like, you know, like you hear something cool, you know, and it's just like a single bar or just like one little hit. And you're like, oh, you know, maybe that, you know, I could take that and just do whatever, you know.
Right. It's like you've got 1,000 different puzzles and you just dumped out all of the pieces together. And it's like, oh, maybe this piece could go with this puzzle over here. You know what I mean? Like it's so fun kind of putting them all together. Like I'm a huge Beastie Boys fan and, you know, Paul's Boutique was one of the most influential and biggest like albums that had so much sampling. Like De La Soul is another example of a band that I'm a big fan of who took sampling and did really unique stuff with it. Right. Like he could always do what like Puff Daddy did, which is just take a song and sample it and kind of try to slightly remake it. But I was always fascinated by, you know, like a lot of the stuff on Paul's Boutique where it's like just tiny little bits and pieces here and there that are like all woven together to make just some crazy cool stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was a big fan of the Beastie Boys, too. Yeah, like that's just hugely influential album. Like you probably couldn't even make it today without it costing a fortune, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So what else were you listening to that was like influential to you?
At the time, like I listened to a lot of RJD2, who's another producer.
Okay.
Just a couple I can think of, like Madlib, a guy named Blockhead who produced for a rapper named Aesop Rock.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think. I listened to some like, you know, sort of like 90s, a little bit of 90s and 80s rap. So kind of like, you know, you got that like boom bap type sound that's pretty easy to imitate and stuff like that.
Yeah. So did you ever want to pursue this? I don't know what you do for work, but did you ever want to pursue this as like a job, or was it always just a hobby, that something that you did for fun?
Yeah, I did when I was younger. It was one of those things, like I kind of fell out of it, but like at the time I was like, you know, really into just like studying it and experimenting with it. LP, I don't know if you've heard of him, another big producer, but he had a record label and like I wanted to start my own record label, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in high school, I actually did produce like a little CD that I just like burned, you know, 50 copies or whatever on my little CD burner we had. I made some shirts too.
That's awesome.
It was a nice little hustle. It wasn't like, you know, it wasn't great. It wasn't winning any awards or anything, but sure. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
I mean, everyone starts somewhere, right? Like I was all through high school and even in my early 20s, I was in rock bands just trying to make music because it was fun. It never went anywhere. But I look back on this time and, you know, it was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I wish that I had access to like GarageBand. You know what I mean? Like you buy a Mac out of the book and you've got like GarageBand and it's got samplers and it's got drum machines, it's got everything, you know what I mean, like everything to record, plug and play basically. And I remember, and this is like gosh, maybe 2000 2001, we set up a Sony mini disc in the room with a mic to record just to record us live, because it was not easy to get it into a computer you know back then. But
yep.
Yeah, it was good times.
Yeah. I think I had a little like karaoke mic. I don't know. It was like a little $5 thing from the thrift store or something. But it had a, you know, the little jack that I could plug into my computer. And so sometimes I'd, you know, I'd plug it in and like we'd like record a acoustic guitar or whatever, stuff like that.
Yeah. It's so funny going back to the like analog stuff in the early digital days. Like we didn't have SoundCloud back then, so sharing your music was also pretty tough. You'd probably just burn it on CDs and try to to send them out or whatever. But so it feels like, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but video games were never your main hobby, is that fair to say? Or was there a point where they became more of a focus for you?
They were kind of a hobby, or like they kind of have been like over the years. When I was younger, I think I played a lot more just because like it was something to do, I guess. I was kind of like, you know, the video game kid in my family sort of. But
okay.
I remember like my older brother's friends from the neighborhood would come over and like they'd be playing Mortal Kombat or Mario Kart, you know, and I'd always be bothering them to like let me get a turn in, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
My one childhood friend, like, he was really into video games. So, you know, I'd go over his house, we'd play whatever. He always had like, you know, a bunch of consoles and stuff. But I wouldn't say it probably wasn't like my main hobby. It's just something like I've kind of been into.
Sure. What about the development side? Because, you know, we'll get to that with Link to the Past Randomizer. But when did you get interested in the development side of video games?
I don't think I was ever really that interested in video game development in particular. Just one of those things, like, you know, it'd be cool to make a game. I actually never really did any programming or knew anything about programming until I started playing the randomizer.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, like it was kind of a coincidence because like around the time I started playing it, I had this book I think it was called Python Crash Course. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to learn Python, you know? And then like, so yeah, that all kind of came together, like converged at that particular moment.
That's interesting. So you weren't coding growing up then, or learning any sort of code as you were coming up? There was no interest in like, I want to make a video game. That just sort of happened later.
Yeah. I mean, when I was a kid, I think I learned how to do like some HTML and CSS, sure. Like little stuff like that. There was like this, my middle school had this C++ programming thing after school, but then like it went for two sessions and then it stopped. So besides that, yeah, I was never really into programming too much.
Okay. You played video games as a kid, but it's not your focus. Like a lot of the people that I have on the show, it's like video games were their life. You know what I mean? Like they're playing them all the time. It sounds like you just kind of did it casually here and there to play with and hang out with your friends. That's fair to say?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I'd play by myself too. You know, I'd buy like a game here or there and then just, you know, just chill like in the evening or whatever. But for the most part, yeah, probably.
And it doesn't even sound like you were like a big like Nintendo fanboy or anything.
Yeah. Yeah. I was never really into any like particular console or franchise or anything. I just kind of like, if it was fun, I played it, you know, that type of thing. Mm-hmm.
And you said you never went past the PlayStation 2 as far as consoles go?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I played like other ones, obviously, you know, just at a friend's house or whatever, stuff like
but
that.
But you never picked one up, right? You never, you don't have a Switch. You never went with like an Xbox 360 or got into any of that stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've thought about it, but it's just, it's one of those things where it's like, I don't know. It feels like kind of a commitment, you know, like if I buy sure. this console, now I have to play a bunch of games. So.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like something that you're looking to really spend your time doing. So I take it the retro stuff was kind of always piqued your interest then. So is that fair to say, like, you kind of always look back playing like emulators and stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. That's been pretty consistent like throughout the years. Like my one childhood friend I mentioned before, I remember him, you know, him being like, you know, hey, like you can, there's this thing called an emulator, you know, and a thing called a ROM. Like, I'm like, you know, holy shit, like that sounds awesome. I'm going to try
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
And then like later on, I got like a little bit into ROM hacks, kind of, you know, one of those things, like every now and then I'd play, like, you know, it'd be like, you know, I wonder if there's any good ROM hacks for, you know, Zelda or Final Fantasy VI, something like that. I'd give that a shot.
Is there any good ROM hacks for Final Fantasy VI?
That's a good question. I think, I'm trying to remember, I can't think of any offhand. There's probably a couple that I played one just recently. I can't even remember the name of it, but it was kind of like, the premise was basically like a vanilla expanded type hack where it's sort of like the vanilla game, just with more stuff.
Mm.
And then, I don't want to say what the actual gimmick was because it's a spoiler and I know you're probably going to play it soon, but there was sort of a gimmick where like you get this one extra character who you didn't have in the original game. But it was okay. Kind of, you know, it was just, you know, but yeah, other than that, I'm not really sure. I can't even think. There's one called Brave New World, I think, but I don't know if it's good or not, because like all my friends who are into RPGs are like, it either sucks or it's great, you know. So
sure. Were you into the Final Fantasy stuff? You know that I've started playing 4, almost done with it. I just got to the moon, and I've had a blast, you know, getting into that. Were you ever into the Final Fantasy stuff?
Yeah, I was into it. We had Final Fantasy 4 for our Super Nintendo. It was called 2.
Yeah.
In the US, of course. But so yeah, we had that, and then I played it like before I could even really read or understand like what was going on, you know?
Yeah.
So
you got your ass kicked a lot?
Yeah, I'd always run away from battles, and like I knew, because like my brother's older friend would be like, oh, you know, like if you run away from battles, you lose money. And I'm like, well, I don't want to fight random battles. So, you know, but, that's but yeah, we had that. And then eventually I got old enough to like make my way through it. And then at some point, one of my sisters-in-law who like worked at a video store or something that went out of business, gave me a copy of Final Fantasy VI, like in the box, which was cool.
Wow. Yeah, that's cool.
I think that was like, probably my favorite game, like at the time, maybe even still today, because it was the first game where I was like, the actual story, like the narrative and all that actually like really kind of impacted me like emotionally, or I became really invested in it, you know?
Yeah. Man, I'm excited to play it because everyone's talked about how good six is. Like, I was hesitant to jump into it just because I've never played Final Fantasy. And you know how, like, when someone builds something up, it's hard for it to reach the height of the buildup.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah. You know, I jumped into Final Fantasy IV because that was what everyone recommended on the Discord. And I'm glad they did, because it's a lot of fun. And I think the story is really interesting. I'm having fun with it. But it feels like everyone agrees that six is the best. So after like getting into four, now I'm like really, really looking forward to what six has. I am a little nervous about it living up to the expectations of that everyone puts on it. But
yeah, a lot of it's probably nostalgia. I realized as I got older, like parts of it were kind of bad or flawed, but like in a way I couldn't really understand because I wasn't like an RPG head really, you know, But yeah, I think like in terms of like the actual story and like the set pieces and just all of that, it's really, really great, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited to check it out. So when did you find Twitch in speedrunning? Was it through YouTube? Was it through something else? Did you ever have an interest in speedrunning yourself?
I never really had an interest in speedrunning. It was kind of one of those things, like, I feel like sometime in like the early 2010s, maybe, or like late 2000s, there'd be like one of those odd articles where it'd be like, you know, someone just beat Super Mario Bros. In 5 minutes or something. And you're like, whoa, you know, how'd they do that? You know, It was like its own genre sort of, but I never really got into it until like the later 2010s. I forget why exactly, but I was just like, you know, I'm going to look up a speed run of Final Fantasy VI. And so I saw like I saw a GDQ run by Puexel and Essentia. It was like a co-op 100% run or something, and it was like 8 hours long, but I watched the whole thing like in a bunch of sittings. And so I was like, oh, you know, this is pretty neat, and it looks like they're doing it for this marathon thing, you know. So I sort of became aware of it, or got into it a little bit that way. Cool. As far as Twitch, I think I just had a friend recommend it to me, like, oh, you know, you should check this out. And so, you know, I looked at it, and then basically one of the first things I did was like, you know, what's a game that I'm familiar with that I might actually want to, you know, watch someone play? And it was A Link to the Past. And then that's how I found the randomizer, basically.
Okay. So was that after you saw the GDQ stuff?
Yeah. That had to be shortly after, like around the same time.
Okay. That 8 hour run is that really the speed run for Final Fantasy VI?
Yeah, it might be a little bit, I might be overselling. It might be like 7 or like 6.5, but
I mean, that's a long ass time.
But yeah, I think it's shorter now, but it's still, I mean, it's pretty long. RPG runs tend to be like quite a bit longer.
Sure.
Usually.
Right. That's pretty bananas though. I never thought about looking into the speed runs, like, again, because it's so brand new for me now, the early Final Fantasy stuff. But damn, that's a long ass time. Okay, so do you remember who you first saw when you turned into Link to the Past?
Yeah, there was a streamer. I'm not sure exactly how to pronounce their name. It's like Zhao Mei Lin, I think.
Okay.
And I think they're sort of like around. They don't really race or anything. I haven't like seen them around, but I know they play like Zelda 1. Maybe in SMZ3 nowadays. But yeah, I just saw that, you know, and it was just kind of basically what it said in the tin. You know, it's like, oh, hey, game's randomized, you know.
Mm-hmm. What was your initial impressions of the randomizer?
I mean, I guess I liked it because...
Yeah, because you're still here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I just remember being like... At first, it just seemed like this neat thing because... I'd like replay A Link to the Past, you know, maybe once every 2 or 3 years, I'd just sit down and be like, you know, I'll play this. And I think this was around the time, like a little bit after I had done that, maybe. And so I'm like, okay, you know, I'll try this out. You know, it looks like a nice little puzzle. And so, you know, I'd play a seed in a few sittings. Usually I didn't even know people raced it at the time. It like never even occurred to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you know how it is. Like you do one, then I'm like, okay, it's randomizer, so if I do another one, it's different, so I'll give that a try. And then like it kind of became one of those things where like I just start one maybe a few times a week, and then I just never stopped, I guess. And yep. Here I am.
Yep. So So you're trying it out. What about the racing scene? When do you start getting into racing it for yourself or even watching races?
I think I might have discovered racing. Like, I think I saw that streamer doing like a casual race in voice chat. And that was the first time, like, you know, I ever saw racing in general. But then, like, just looking through the Twitch category one day, I think I found a speed gaming race. And that probably led me to the 2017 fall tournament, which I started like religiously.
Okay.
Yeah.
With that tournament, were you just on the sidelines or did you volunteer or did you even like look into the community or was it just, I'm just going to watch it?
I mostly just watched it. I don't think I was on Discord or I wasn't super active. Like I had no idea, you know, where, you know, any community hubs or anything like that were. And so, I mean, I just like, I'd look at the speed gaming schedule. I'd look at the brackets, you know, I'd be like, it kind of became one of those things where I sort of like, you know, try to plan it out or like catch a race whenever I can, you know? Mm-hmm. And then somehow, I don't remember, eventually I joined Discord and maybe I joined the server, but I wasn't that active. And then like, I think I only kind of got involved with the community around like the spring 2018 tournament.
Did you get involved by racing?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's when I started racing. Yeah. Like maybe a couple months before that.
So tell me, because I don't see you race a lot. I've seen you race, just not a lot. What's your relationship with racing when you first started and then how it's evolved to where it is now?
I think at first it was like a little more casual. It was kind of one of those things where I was like, you know, playing the game more. And then like, as I was watching the tournament, you know, kind of picking up stuff from that and like thinking about, you know, how they were playing and what they were doing and all that. But then like, I feel like I kind of became sort of competitive eventually.
Mm.
But then like, I don't know how to explain it. I think I just don't have that sort of sense of urgency or like whatever it is that makes you, yeah, whatever it is. Yeah. It makes you want to like win the tournament, I guess.
sure.
Like it's really fun, I think, to like, you know, theorize about the game and even to practice, like to review, you know, your VODs, other people's VODs and like drill rooms and all that stuff. But then like, it's just that one thing, like when you're in the race, you know, and you just want to, I don't know, I just don't have it, I guess. So yeah, I kind of fell off.
Yeah. It's the competitive like nature, right? Like you just don't have the desire, like you don't have to win, right? Like, is that what it is? Like, there's no like, there's nothing burning inside of you of like, I gotta win.
Yeah. 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 I'd say that. Yeah.
It's not that you don't want to, it's not like you're trying to lose, but if you lose, it's also not that big of a deal. Right. Like,
right. Yeah.
Okay. So when you were growing up, did you have any thing that was competitive? Like, did you play sports or even when you're playing video games with your friends, was there a sense of competition or was it always just pretty casual?
For the most part with me and my friends, I think it was pretty casual. As far as sports, I played some football. I think when I was in junior high, I did like football, wrestling and track.
Oh, okay.
So I was kind of competitive at wrestling, but I went to like a really like a much smaller, like, you know, D3, D4 school or whatever. So I think I got like third in our conference or something, but it was really, you know,
light on competition, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like at the time, it's like, you know, I was into it. I did have that sort of drive, but it just, in hindsight, it was kind of like, you know, not that big of a deal.
Right. It wasn't like you were competing at the top tier of the level that you're competing at. So it didn't matter as much, I guess. I don't know. Is that fair to say? Like,
yeah, like now, like looking back, I don't really care. But at the time I was, you know, really into it or I would take a loss kind of hard. Like I was a little competitive, but it wasn't, I don't know. It wasn't, still wasn't a huge deal for me, I guess.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. It's just, it is kind of what our nature is, right? Like some of us have that competitive drive that pushes us. Some have it to a fault and then some people don't have it at all. And you know, it's just kind of what makes us who we are, I guess.
Yeah.
So you start racing. How do you do in some of the tournaments?
I think the first one, the spring 2018, I did not make it to brackets. I think my record was 3-4, I want to say.
That's the big 512, right?
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, I think the farthest I've ever made it in like a main tournament is groups. But I never really, I'm trying to remember, like I've gotten a couple wins in like the group stage and that's it basically.
Okay. So you've qualified, you just haven't made it past the group stage is what you're saying.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Were you okay with that? Were you like satisfied with your placement in the tournaments?
Overall, you know, it's disappointing, you know, like we were just talking about, but I, you know,
you weren't losing sleep basically.
Right.
Okay. So as time progresses, in the LTTPR community, do you find like a group of people to, I don't know, befriend or, cause it feels like to me, you're kind of like a lone wolf. Like you kind of like to pop in here or there, but you're not like in one of the groups. Is that fair to say? Like, it feels like you're kind of all over the place, but you're not really like, I don't think you're in 40 bonks and you're not like with PogChamp and you know what I mean? Like there's all these different, like, I guess cliques mm-hmm. within the community, but it feels like you're kind of a loner and not in the, that sounds so bad, but I'm not meaning it in a bad way. Just a lone wolf. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. Yeah. I know what you mean. Like I'm kind of here and there. I like to come and go, talk a little shit, that type of thing. And then,
yeah, that's exactly what it is. You come in, you talk a little shit, and then you pop out, and then you pop in here and there. Yeah. I think that's kind of your relationship. And that's, I take it, that's what you enjoy. Like, you're not here to like be friends with everyone. Is that, I'm making you sound like an asshole. That's not what I'm trying to do.
Oh, no. You're right. Like, I mean, I hang out with people. Like, I'm in the 40 bonk server. And okay. I think there's a couple, I'm like in some random servers and I'll like, you know, hang out and chat and maybe play some Among Us or some Jackbox or whatever, you know, like, mm-hmm. but yeah, most of the people I hang out with sort of adjacent are like RPG speedrunners, just kind of by coincidence, I guess.
Okay. That makes sense.
So, I mean, it's just one of those things. I don't know. Like, I never really like, kind of like you said, I was never really like looking for friends, I guess, or I never fell into a groove, but if it happened, it happened. So
sure.
That type of thing.
Yeah. I mean, like, I feel like you'd pop in on my, I don't know what group I'm, the 216 group. I don't know, but it was before 216. It feels like you'd hang out in my stream a lot when we were, you know, doing a lot of the music stuff. And I think you might have even played some Jackbox and stuff with us. So I don't even know what my group would be considered, but it feels like you were definitely friendly with the people over there.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember I used to hang out in that casual rando Discord, I think.
Oh, like, yeah. Yeah.
A bunch of folks were in there, but yeah. Yeah. That's kind of what I did. I just, you know, hung out in your stream, hang out in random streams and then bounce basically.
Yeah. that's cool. It's who you are. So when does the idea even of helping out with development begin? Like you mentioned that Python book, was the idea like maybe I can help out with Rando, or was there something else that made you want to learn Python?
I think it was just kind of a general interest and I just kind of happened to like get the book at the same time I was playing. But in terms of like A Link to the Past, I think what really made me get into it was when they came out with inverted mode.
Yeah.
And there was like a lot of hype around it at the time. And, you know, it was just one of those things where it's like, whoa, you know, like, I wonder how they make it do that, you know, like that type of thing. And so I started looking into like the source code and trying to build it myself. Like, this was around the same time they made their like main repo private, because like the main randomizer has a public and a private repo.
Oh.
And so for some reason, I don't know, I guess people were annoying them, like making, like building the randomizer when it was broken and reporting bugs and stuff. But anyway, yeah, so I did that. And then I was like, you know, kind of struggling, trying to get that going. And then I realized, so inverted mode, like originally, you couldn't play that with the entrance randomizer.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically the entrance randomizer is like a separate randomizer written in Python. So then I was kind of like, okay, maybe I can like, you know, kind of try to bring these two things together, I guess.
So you're the one we blame for inverted cross keys?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Okay. So did you have to work with like trying to figure out the logic and get that kind of stuff, or what was it that you're figuring out?
So basically I had to like do the logic. So like, you know, the randomizer has like a whole like model of the world and where everything is and all that. So you have to do that part, and then you have to figure out like how to make like writes to the ROM. Like you have to write these bytes and those bytes for whatever, you know, just to change stuff. So
it was a lot of experimenting then.
Yeah, basically. I wasn't really super, I'd written like a couple little like toy programs and stuff, but I wasn't even that experienced in Python. So I was just kind of like trying to copy what they did for the regular mode and then kind of just change that, you know?
I see. But it happens, right? Like you create what's needed for inverted cross keys. I remember when that happened. Do you then get invited to be a part of the dev team for the main branch?
Not at that point. Basically, I actually had some trouble like getting a hold of the dev team because like I have no idea what they're doing at that time. And it was just kind of like, you know, I'm going to try this. Maybe they're doing it. Maybe they're not. And like at the time, I had the impression that the dev team like does a lot more than, and this is, I'm not trying to like, you know,
throw shade
or anything.
Yeah.
But like, and this applies just as much to me today, but like, I thought, you know, they were like, you know, they might be making their own thing or this or that, but like, long story short, nobody was doing it. I had it. And then like one day, I think I was watching a VTorp stream or something, and he made some offhand comment about, you know, maybe we'll have inverted for entrance. And I'm like, hey, I have inverted for entrance. And, you know, and he was like, okay, talk to this other guy. But I wasn't invited on just yet. There's sort of like, there's a handful of like contributors who are like, you know, kind of do this or that, but aren't necessarily like in the dev channel.
Right. And
so that was kind of where I was at.
Okay. So when you finished the inverted entrance, inverted cross keys, did you feel like you had a pretty good grasp on what you were doing? Like you felt like, how long did it take for you to put it all together?
I'd say probably a few months. I can't say like exactly how many hours I put in, but like it took a long time because it was like, you know, you have to like shuffle all the entrances, and then like if one entrance is wrong, you get this error, and then you got to like, you know, figure all that out. But I'd say like from start to finish, maybe like 3 or 4 months, maybe.
Okay. Were you feeling more comfortable then as someone working in the coding and the development of the game?
Yeah, a little bit. I was still pretty inexperienced. Like it was pretty bad initially, just like in terms of bugs or like little weird things. But so yeah, even after I like, you know, got it merged in, I still had to like, you know, fix a bunch of stuff, or someone else had to fix it, that type of thing. So at the time, kind of, but not necessarily.
Sure. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. I want to say that you came to me with an idea of an actual like ROM hack of ALTTPR. Is that right? Or am I misremembering something?
Yeah.
Were you thinking about doing a ROM hack?
Yeah. Yeah. I made like a little like ROM hack based on the randomizer base ROM basically. And then I think I sent you like a advanced copy sort of for feedback.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know if you remember playing it.
I have real vague memories of it.
I think the only thing I remember was you told me like the flute was in the Turtle Rock, like one of those chests behind the torch. So you hovered to it, something like that, maybe.
Okay.
But yeah. I kind of took like a lot of my knowledge from working on the entrance randomizer and kind of, you know, just sort of applied it to that. Tried to make like some custom stuff too.
What happened with it? Did it just not go anywhere? Did you not finish it?
I finished it, and a few people played it. I said it was okay. Like that was basically it. It wasn't anything super great. It had a gimmick actually. I think the gimmick was like you could use the mirror all the time, basically, just to go either way.
Oh, okay. Do you have any desire to make a full like Link to the Past randomizer ROM hack?
Maybe. I think it kind of depends on like, I don't know, you need a really good premise, I think, to make like, you know, you need something that like sets it apart. Kind of like, I think like Key Sanity started out as a little like Lando ROM hack type thing, you know, you really need a good hook, I guess is what I'm saying.
Okay.
So I'd have to think of something like that.
Okay. So what then gets you onto the dev team? Time? Is it just time?
Partially, I think like I had a decent track record. I had a sort of relationship with Synac. Like we were pretty friendly. We were on good terms. I think the thing that got me onto it though was like when I started getting into SNES programming, I wrote this little feature. I wrote the reduced flashing feature actually. That's on the website.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That was just, I was learning it and it was like, not quite trivial, you know, cause it has to be like, and I don't know if it technically is, but it technically has to be like the equal amount of cycles, whether you have the reduced flashing on or flashing. I'm pretty sure like I profiled it and tested it and all that. But anyway, like I think that doing that and then like getting that type of thing, like on the front page, plus kind of having, being sort of consistent and like fixing my own bugs and stuff like that. Eventually Synac just messaged me and he's like, hey, you know, do you want the dev role? And I'm like, okay, you know, why not?
You threw a big party. So what is your role now as a dev? Like, what do you see as your responsibility? What are things that you're working on? Is version 32 ever coming?
I was hoping you were going to ask that, but, so yeah, it's hard to say, like, we don't necessarily have super well-defined roles, I'd say. Like, sort of, you know, VTorp and Synac and Cat kind of run things. So I'll, like, you know, I'll fix stuff with the entrance randomizer and the main item randomizer. But mostly I just, like, I spend a lot of time working on the ROM. It's kind of hard to explain. Like, a lot of stuff I do is sort of housekeeping or just, like, improving the source code. A lot of boring details there. Mm-hmm. I fix like little things like, you know, that little, you know, the little key sanity tracker on the bottom of the menu. Like if you press select, it shows I fixed that. Like, forget what was wrong with it. Oh, it didn't like, so if you open the menu and you press select, it doesn't show that. It just closes. If you're, mm-hmm. if you don't have any items, you know, little, just like a bunch of little things like that, that like, you know, nobody cares about. I wrote a thing that's like, that lets you like shuffle the crystals from the dungeon prize locations and put them in chests and vice versa with the items.
Okay.
So
did you
help
just with like, the new like Ganon hunt stuff? Were you a part of that?
I think Synec did most of that. I think like most of that capability was already in the ROM. So Synec just had to like write the, you know, the PHP code and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. I see. So, what would you like to see happen with the ROM going forward, or with ALTTPR going forward from a dev perspective? Like, I know that there's the door branch, right? And then there's the entrance mm-hmm. branch, which is separate. Do you want to see that stuff unified, or what do you want to do as a dev? Like, what do you see, or what are some of the things you'd like to see in the future?
I think like for me, I'd like to see things kind of unified. Basically, you know, like you said, we have the door rando branch and we have Enemizer, which is like this whole separate program type thing. I think what I would like to see, I don't want to get too deep into the weeds with it, but I think what we could do is like unify all of that, and we need to make the generation faster and like more capable. Mm-hmm. Because like, so right now, the door rando and the entrance randomizer are kind of slow and like, I don't know, it's kind of hard to explain, but like, I'd like to basically allow like developers and like sort of third party tinkerers, like more tools and stuff like,
to help speed stuff up.
Yeah. Basically, I don't know. It's kind of hard to explain, like if you're not sort of a developer, I guess. But
sure.
So, like, it needs to be faster. Basically, is the long and short of it. But I think what we can do is like sort of rewrite the whole thing as like a library, and then like that can basically be like shipped out to whoever, like trackers or like the door rando client, and then we can sort of unify things that way. Like trackers could, mm-hmm. for example, like right now a tracker has to rewrite the game's whole logic in order to show you on the map, like where you can reach, where you can't reach. But one thing we could actually do is like, we can just publish, you know, one thing, like one package or whatever, that just has a function that says like, you know, give me all the items you have and I'll give you all the places you can reach, if that makes sense.
Sure. How do we prevent people from cheating with that though? Like if there's too much information, or is it already there and you just got to hope that there's no tools that can parse it?
So for what I mean, it's like basically exactly what trackers would do now, right?
I see.
This is just like in terms of like, so you have like the abstract world model, right? Sort of separate from the ROM, like where items are and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can have like, so the randomizer already kind of does this, right? It has this, when it's figuring out like how to place items, it has a thing that says like, you know, here's the items I can have, or here's the items I do have, here's the places I can reach. But then that exact same thing can be used for like auto tracking or like the map tracking that works now.
Right. Yeah. I get what you're saying.
In terms of cheating, like it's just, you know, the same as we do now, basically.
I see. Are you working on version 32, or is that something that the only like VTorp and CAT are working, and Synac are working on?
Not really. I'm actually kind of working on my own like little side project. But version 32 is mostly VTorp's thing. I think the reason it's taking so long is because like it involves describing the whole game in plain text, basically. So it's a format called YAML, which you'll be familiar with, like if you've ever looked at a Sahabat preset or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, like the idea is you have this plain text sort of description that anyone can edit. And then instead of like having all this stuff hard coded, like, you know, in PHP or Python, like it's a lot harder to read and harder for like any random person to edit. Like, you know, you just have it in this plain text format, and then your code, you know, just takes that text and does whatever with it.
Mm, okay. So it's going to be very different, basically, is what you're saying. It's
In a way, like if you want to like tinker with it and you want to like, you know, play with it,
it's already there. Sort of, yeah.
Yeah. But in terms of like what the player experiences, it should be about the same.
Sure.
It will let us do some other stuff. Like, I think they're working on like some new animizer stuff that'll be a little more convenient,
mm-hmm.
and let us do more stuff, like, you know, place more enemies here, there. It'll also let us do stuff like, just for an example, I don't think there's any plans for this, but you could have like a different starting location for Link. Because like, you know, the way the item randomizer is programmed right now, like all the logic just assumes you start, you know, at these three places, stuff like that.
Yeah. What's your project? Do you want to share that at all? Or is that something you're keeping close to the vest for now?
I've talked about it a little bit. I'm a little hesitant just because like, it's kind of like V32, like two, because
sure.
I can just talk about it and then never show it. And then, you know,
sure.
But yeah, I've basically just been trying to rewrite the whole thing. Like kind of like I mentioned before, rewrite the whole randomizer, like as a library, and hopefully write it like pretty fast. Try to make the logic and all that like more data driven and stuff. One thing I want to do is like, I'd like to make the logic sort of what's called like a domain specific language, which means that it's not exactly like a programming language, but it's like something like it kind of is a programming language, but just like a small one that's like simple and easy to understand. So like, for example, you have some logic for like, say, a hammer peg, and then you have this edge, right, in a graph. And so the requirement just says like, you know, has hammer or something. But then what you can do is like, if you have it written as this language that's sort of like compiled to like actual code that runs the logic engine, you can actually like swap those out, right? So like you could have the logic be basically completely modular, right? And nobody would have to write any actual like, you know, code or anything.
Wow. All right. So this is coming out next month?
I'd give it, you know, a couple years. Maybe.
Yeah. All right. So you do the dev thing. You race here and there on the ladder. What do you feel your relationship is with Rando overall? Are you happy with where it is? Do you like your role as like a dev, as someone who races occasionally? Like you're not Are you still entering tournaments?
Not really. I think I did like one qualifier for the last main tournament.
Okay.
So I'm not really too keen on that too much anymore. I'd say I'm pretty satisfied. You know, I'd like to be the thing with like the dev work is like, there's always more shit to do. And there's just, you know, so much shit to do, but, and you always wish, you know, you always wish it was done a little faster, a little earlier, that type of thing.
Sure. It is all volunteer work though, right? Like, I mean, you are volunteering your time. You're not getting paid to do this.
Yeah. But yeah. But yeah, I think, you know, I'd like to race a little more. Lately I've been working on like a soon to be coming out, hopefully, update. So that's been taking up a lot of my time, but yeah, I'd like to race on the ladder a little bit more. Maybe, you know, I always think, you know, it's one of those things, like I always think, you know, maybe I'll actually like make a run at a ladder title or something like that. But then, I think, you know, like I said, the lack of drive just kind of, you know, just run out of steam.
Sure.
After a little bit.
Yeah. The seasons are long too. Like you got to keep it going.
Yeah.
All right. Have you done any mod work or like admin work for tournaments? Have you wanted to run a tournament? I think you're a league mod, right?
Yeah, mostly just the league, I want to say. I completely forgot to mention that, but yeah. I think I've been a mod since season 2. I realized like a little while back, I think I've technically been like on the league team longer than you have, which is funny.
That is funny. Yeah. So you've been there since... You've been a mod since season 2, right? So, and you've been there since. So, yeah. I mean, I was gone all of season 5, and now we're starting season 6. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, how did that even happen? How did you become a mod for League? I must have done it, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. You recruited me. I think you just, you know, you saw the potential. And,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I've never really wanted to run a tournament. I think like my role as a League mod is just like I just try to make things a little easier for everyone else, ideally, you know.
Yeah.
I don't want too much responsibility. I just want to like kind of help things sort of move along, I guess.
Sure. Yeah, I get that. And that's, I think, why you've been a good league mod for as long as you have, right? Because we got rid of some people like after season 2 and 3, not because I didn't like them, but because they didn't do anything and we needed people that actually did stuff. So, and have you played in the league?
No, I never really. I've thought about it, but I just never, it was one of those things. I just never joined a team. So
that's what I thought. All right. Maybe season 6, you're going to get some guys together for season 6.
Probably not, you know, it's getting a little late for that, but we'll see.
All right. Tilt question, which is going to be, I mean, based off the conversation that we just had for the last hour, it's going to be a little interesting because it doesn't feel like how do you get tilted if losing doesn't bother you, but so the question is this, how do you handle tilt, whether it's in the middle of a seed or at the end of a race?
So yeah, in the middle of a seed for me, it's one of those things where like, I just try to like take stock of my options and like say, you know, you have a bad death to Malthiela or something. You just kind of walk away from it, you know, and like do something else, try to, you know, if you have something else.
Sure.
Or like, for example, like, you know, sometimes you have that situation where like you have a really annoying like last location chain and it's just like, well, that's what the game is sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
As far as afterwards, I don't know. I think I'm pretty decent at just kind of, you know, I mean, I felt disappointed or like annoyed and all that. Like, I think I'm pretty good at just kind of walking away from it though. And just like, yeah, you know, all you can do is run your race really. And then when it's over, it's over. So,
yeah. It's a pretty good way to go about racing because it doesn't ruin your day. Like too many times if I raced and then it's just ruined my day and possibly my week. But yeah, that's cool, man.
Yeah.
So you're good with the future of where Rando is, right? You feel like things are in a good spot with Tark and with the, you know, the now dead council and the dev team and where everything is going with all the different branches and stuff?
Yeah. I mean, I don't worry too much about it. I try not to worry too much about it, I guess. But I mean, I think, you know, things are always a little up in the air, but like for the moment, I think everything's kind of pressing ahead pretty steady. So just hoping it stays on track and I just, you know, try to do my little part. That's about it.
Sure. I get it. Well, thanks for coming on the show, man. I really appreciate it. And, you know, send me some more tracks of stuff that I haven't heard, because I always appreciate that. Like when we did the 216 summer playlist, I was really hoping that you threw out your songs, because that you gave are so good, man. I never heard any of those. So we'll have to keep doing that. But yeah, thanks for coming on the show, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a good time.
Again, thanks to Cassidy for coming on. Really appreciated it. If you're looking for good music recommendations, Cassidy's definitely one to go to. He won't give you necessarily the top 40 hits, which is what I'm looking for. I'm looking for stuff that's outside of the top 40 that everyone else knows. And he'll give you some really cool stuff that you've never heard before, especially if you're into hip hop. So again, thanks to Cassidy for coming on the show. Really appreciated it. Next week, we've got Armalex. Armalex is pretty new to the community, but has made himself known pretty quickly. He's playing in the open with the Crystal Roller Crew from last season, who went 8-1 in season 5. So expect big stuff from them in season 6. I did have a little bit of a tough time not fanboying a little too much about his Magic stuff, because he is a Magic the Gathering Pro Tour champion. So I geek out a little bit, but such a great guy to talk to, and I had a blast. So come back next week for Armalex. And like I mentioned, our final 4 episodes of season 4. Murderer's Row coming up with Armalex, Will WC, great one, James FNX, and Allison will be our final guest, who's been on the show 3 times, but yet to be on the show proper. It's coming. He's going to close our season out. So thanks for listening. 216pod.com has links to the Discord. Join that. A lot of fun conversations are going on. That's where you can get links to vote for the drafts that we have in the future. Talking lots of sports with the football kicking off, chatting about the episode, place to be for sure. Subscribe wherever you get your podcast. We're available everywhere. If you could leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, helps the show out, helps me out. Yeah, that's going to do it. Thanks again for listening. Really, really appreciate it. Go watch some league. Come back next week. Thanks for listening.